Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhan dhamman sanghan namassami. I didn't expect this to happen to me tonight. Just before the meal, Ajahn Amaro invited me if I could say something this evening. Sorry, can you hear me? Sorry, I don't have a good voice. Hello. Okay. usually I don't have so much loud voice anyway. And then this guru practice time already 10 days or so. So being in a noble silence, I noticed my voice even went down. So this afternoon I had to boost my energy to ready for talk in the public. So 2 weeks of full time guru practice time schedule, and it is very noticeable. Many of us, or all of us, are quite tuned into the routine or structure. This morning, after we monks had the Patimokkha recitation, Ajahn Amaro gave us a short order or exhortation, and he started with his appreciation of how much we, the community, putting effort and then coming together to this practice. And it is really so. I came to Amaravati 2001 in summertime. And so since then, I think this group practice is, I would say, the most well attended, and almost everybody, and quite a sincere commitment to our schedule. Ajahn Amaro has been, I think, last 2 years he had to go to attend Rinpoche's anniversary gathering at one Wat Pa Pon in Thailand in January, so he couldn't commit himself fully 3 months. He had always a clear intention that he would like to be with us for 3 months. So this year, from the very beginning till the end, we could really see how he liked to set up the structure and then tone of our 3 months winter retreat. And as a structure or form, the punctuality and noble silence, he's been guiding us or encouraging us, and we're following it. When I came here 2001 and 2002, the winter retreat I had then was the first one here. And that was just 1 year before Rinpoche was going to have a sabbatical, 1 year sabbatical. And the theme he introduced to the winter retreat then was conviviality. The word, even I didn't know what it was. There are many non-English speaking, some of us are not, the English is not the mother tongue, so conviviality is something like a very friendly, joyous, merry. I look at the dictionary, in fact, and it comes from Latin word, something to do with banquet. So this is really Rompo's way of saying it. Sometimes he uses a certain word in a very challenging way. Retreat is usually we think quiet and composed, but then conviviality is obviously very different or even opposite. And later on I realized why he had to say this was previous years, earlier, somehow people during the retreat time became too intense. And for instance, in the kitchen, when they supporting team were working, considerable amount of tension and even conflict or unpleasant feelings. And so Rumpo wanted to just direct us in a more right way. And I can see skillfulness in it. And it is true when we come to this kind of retreat situation, easily we become sincere is good, but sometimes too serious or unknowingly too intense. And even I can notice in myself too, last 10 days, sudden change of mode from busy time to very quiet mode. I can enjoy it, but also I can notice the way I relate to people. Do not have to speak, but that eye contact, and then some of the the reaction that arises in my heart sometimes. Some kind of hardness, not fully open. I think it's somehow natural because not to speak and then try to be composed. So that element, not necessary, but quite often brings my heart to somehow in a different mode. And particularly today, when I was asked to say something this evening, and I noticed how my heart has been in a different place. I'm not sitting in my own, and then sitting here, it's quite different experience. So I have to change a gear, so to speak, to just change the mode. So when we come to this kind of retreat situation, yes, noble silence, quite supportive and important structure, but causes to our heart, we also need to be aware. My experience of winter retreat in this monastery always appreciated and actually more impressed how the setting quite well organized and also supportive and conducive to the practice. Often people talk about difference between Asia or Thailand, where I became ordained and trained, and here in the West, what is the difference, monastic environment. And there are various differences, of course, but once it comes to this kind of formal setting for the retreat period, what I find here, what I'm finding here, is not easy, actually hardly to have in Thailand. Because in Thailand, yes, it's Theravada Buddhist country, and there are so many monasteries, whole countries is established for the Buddhism. So in a way, nothing needs to be organized. Everything comes more organic, spontaneous way. But here, being a non-Buddhist country or monastic tradition is very rare or almost non-existing. So to set up structure and share the sense of sincere intention is quite consciously done. And so that how I experience here retreat time is wonderfully supportive and well protected. That's would like to mention first, because often people ask what the difference. I think the reason difference between Thailand or Sri Lanka and here, and I think the reason behind is maybe here everything is things are not good enough, or I wish I can go to somewhere else. That kind of thought can arise easily. I like to, from my experience, to say this is really special, far more than good enough. So in that sense, it is a precious and wonderful opportunity. Having said this, when we have this kind of opportunity, being sincere, being interested, and yet what we experience is not necessarily what we planned, what we plan or wish for, often quite opposite, at least in my experience. And so when we, or when I have difficulty, and one phrase or conversation often comes up to my mind as a sort of reminder. And this is it's not my own experience, but what I was taught by Ajahn Goesako, the Japanese senior monk, senior disciple, one of the senior disciples of Ajahn Chah, when he came to Wat Pa Pon, must be 38 years ago or so, when he was a samanera. Before he came to Thailand, he practiced meditation as a yogi in India for 2 years, and he came to Thailand, and he became a samanera at Wat Benjamin Popit, or Marble Temple in Bangkok. And then having looked for several places in Thailand, and eventually he came to Wat Phapon. He had a reputation of Rinpoche. So he came to Wat Phapon, and he met Rinpoche then. I guess, Ajahn Goesako couldn't speak Thai yet because his time in Thailand was still few months. He was just start picking up some Thai words, sentences, I guess. But then he told me how he had encountered Rinpoche, just one single conversation. So maybe Ajahn Goesako or Samanera such and such bowed to Rinpoche. And Rinpoche just asked or said one word, one sentence to him. Lambak Nad. In English, Lambak Nad. This is tough. This is hard. I think before that, there must be some word from Ajahn Goesako to say, now I'm interested in staying here to be trained, something like this. And then Rinpoche's word was, Lambak Nad. This is tough. This is hard. Are you okay? That kind of just one, but quite significant question. And Ajahn Goesako's response was, my pen like up. I don't mind. I don't mind, sir. Something like this. And this very simple conversation, but somehow to me it summarizes that our life, either to come to the practice or come to become ordained, come to the monastery, this summarizes that the way how we are here or how we could go through Lambak Na. It's going to be hard. Are you okay? Are you ready? And my pen like up. I don't mind. Before this winter retreat, end of year, last year, we had a Samanera ordination, Jayanando, or to Anagarika ordination, Rafael and Martin, and I was engaged for their preparation for the ordination, going through chanting or ordination ceremony kind of things. And this is a time of entering the monastery or occasion of transformation, at least physically, and to be with them and then to witness them, it is also, it also became somehow reminder to me, this Lambak Na, my pen like up. It's not easy. I'm sure. I don't mind. I didn't say to this to newly ordained or ordaining three of them, but in my heart, yes, that conversation or words were somehow with me. And also to come to group practice time or winter retreat, it is a time for us to remember or become very conscious of what we are for. Yes, this is actually, we become ordained, we come to the monastery, we started the practice for whatever you call liberation, or to, as we chant in the morning, to end of the whole mass of suffering. And the single purpose of this, like Samanera ordination, Papacha, Sappa Dukkha Ni Sarana Nippana Sacchi Karanataya, and so on. And so Sappa Dukkha, all the suffering. So this is a time for us to remember and come back to the initial single point of our interest, sincere praise to sincere praise where we started. It's true, it can become discouraging or disappointing experience. In a way, the more sincere we become, the heavier the disappointment or even the despair we experience if the things do not go as we might have thought or expected. And in my opinion, this is inevitable, because either you call it the practice or come to be ordained, what we are doing is really against the world of samsara. Pabbaccha, for instance, this word in English, I think we translate it as a going forth, or in Japanese or Chinese, I can say only Japanese pronunciation, shukke. It means leaving home, but home here means more world. And what? And then also, it's not only ordination in terms of form, but when we come to practice, either a lay person or ordained, male, female, or Asian, or Westerners, young, old, strong, weak, what we encounter is our condition, or you can say world. And you see, just now, lay community took 8 precepts, and then a third one, Abrahmacharya Vairamani. So this one is quite strong one, relinquishing sexual activity. We human beings, we are actually programmed to be born for this. It's a biological condition. And then we are saying relinquish it. And once we come to be ordained as a samanera, or taking a pabbaccha ordination, taking 10th precept, giving up money. And this is also quite unusual thing. It means we give up the control over the world. When we have money, it means we can choose. This is more healthy, this is more convenient, this is preferable, this is nice, and so on. But having taken this 10th precept of relinquishing money, we become mendicant. So the relation to the world, and particularly from these two, Brahmacharya, or in English translation, holy life, relinquishing sexual activity, and giving up usage of money. So this is a really symbolically we are different from how world functions. And this is what it means to me is out of samsara. Totally different relation to the world, where world is to produce offsprings and to look for what do we want to. And this is a birth, world of birth and death. But to practice or to become ordained, the relation to these changes completely. Completely come out of this context. Rinpoche's Dhamma book, A Taste of Freedom. And this original Thai of this translation called Noket Nuapom. Noket Nuapom. He condition. Upon result. So out of cause and result, cause and effect. And you say, oh yes, this is okay, you understand. But you really this take what it means. Come out totally different from the place where we usually are. We are living in a world of cause and effect, conditioned world, gain and loss, happiness and suffering, and so on. But no khet nuapom. So this is the place where our mendicant life or ordained way of living or doesn't have to be physically, yes, ordained is, yes, but meditation, what this meditation practice means is pointing at this noket nuapom out of samsara. Ajahn Amaru's guidance, I don't have to say this, everybody can know that he's quite skilled in explanation, wording, and introducing concepts, pointing out where to work, at what to do, how very thorough. And yet, one thing often he mentioned, and I think key is bhava, becoming. So this whatever you practice, but he always pointing out of becoming. So where we practice, how we practice, but this area of becoming, whether we are in a place of no ket nuapom, out of samsara, or we just follow our tendency of samsara, gaining and loss, fighting this, negotiating that, looking for that. So this is important, but it becomes challenge because this is how we human being, both physically and mentally, being conditioned long, long time. This is the power of samsara. So once we come to the monastery, it wouldn't be easy. Once we come to practice, there would be challenges because what we are doing is actually against the world, against the samsara, against what we just feel so comfortable. And once we come to practice, for instance, sitting, okay, this 1 hour, what I can get, how am I progressing? That kind of just habitual thinking or conditioning can come in and then judge us. Yes, I'm progressing. This retreat is good. Or I'm bad. That kind of commentary or actually strong judgment one after another. And possibly we suffer. And that's why we often being taught the significance of Kanti, patience. And patience in every way, it is important quality, quite necessary quality to practice through or live through in a monastic life. But why is that? Is to this constant challenge of world, constant difficulty coming from samsara, and remind us where is the right place. T8 years ago, Ajahn Goesako met Ajahn Cha and then Rambhag Na. Might be like, I don't mind. So this, I don't mind. Like for this retreat, there are going to be discouraging moments or disappointing experiences, confusing times. But it is quite good to remind us it is our intention. My pen like up, I don't mind. Okay, there's a hardship, but I am willing. So that motivation each of us to bring up in our heart. And when was it? 27 years ago. Now, when I met Ajahn Goesako at Wat Pananajat, I was a layman when I came to Ubon and heard a reputation of Wat Pananajat, International Forest Monastery. And I came there and I didn't know anything about Ajahn Goesako. Ajahn Passanao was the abbot, the fourth abbot of Wat Pananajat then. Anyway, I was there and somehow Ajahn Goesako was there, and having heard another Japanese layman was staying there, he came to see me. I was very lucky. And then my conversation with him was, maybe first he said, oh, are you Japanese? And that kind of just small introducing to each other. But then what he said to me was in English. So please strengthen your mind. Well, actually, he used that please, very polite, but firmly, clearly, he said, please strengthen your mind. And my immediate response, I didn't say anything, but I couldn't help my my immediate response was, I didn't like it. I think being youth and then a bit rebellious of everything, particularly authority, word strong, I didn't like. Strong, always exploit the weak, that kind of things. I had a perception. So I didn't like the word strength, strong, to be strong, something like this. And I didn't say, I didn't verbalize this, but obviously it came up from my face or somehow. So he picked up and he rephrased it. Please purify your mind. That was agreeable to me. Pure is a nice word. And again, this word been staying with me too. And although initially I didn't particularly appreciate the word strong or strengthen the mind, now actually this is a really right word, because there are moments of discouragement or hardship. So what we need is, okay, I will go through. I will go through. That kind of encouragement. I don't say it's a warrior kind of strong energy, but at least willingness to, okay, I don't give in. So the same as the way Ajahn Kawesoko said to Rinpoche, my pen light up, I don't mind. And again, I'm saying that once we come to the monastery and practice like this, this is place of just to see all the problem in ourselves, condition from the samsara, and meditation, or often once we are really when we lose perspective or somehow we couldn't stop proliferating our mind, then we might think, I am terrible meditator, or I don't have enough parami, I cannot practice, I am not the right person, my character is not good enough, and so on. This kind of strong, convincing word. And the mind knows where is the weakest point. Really tricky. Mind knows how to discourage us or how to bring us to where samsara works better. And we believe it. And then either to say, this is not the right place, or maybe this lifetime I do something else. All the story comes, and it really looks appeals true to us. Here. What I remember, the word I value from Lumpo. Lumpo Smedo is, he says, you are none of them. Sorry, I have to put a context, but this is the word. You are none of them. Now, our mind says really various kind of things. Oh, I am this, I am that, or she's this, world of that. We can extend, but essentially, the point is, I am this, I am that, one after another. Tossing back and forth, tossing us back and forth, right and left, everywhere. And then Rumpo's word, you are none of them. And this is, to me, is a very good reminder to shift from where I am identifying myself in certain, okay, character or problem or perception, this and that, to where, the place where, out of that, completely out, not just negotiating, maybe, okay, your character, maybe you practice, it will be better to be patient, something will happen, or future, it will be less painful. No, none of this. But you are none of them. Total shift happens here. Freedom is instant. And this is, I often see as an importance, right, when we come to practice where we are. You can say, even use the word samadhi, Eightfold Noble Path. The first one, samadhi, right understanding or right attitude. So the first one determines the rest. And then when we practice, either with right, what is right, right understanding, right attitude, or not, you are none of them. The place of total freedom, the place of nobody, or the place where we feel familiar, easy to understand, but constant struggle, negotiation, back and forth, birth and death, that place. And about 2 months ago, when I had a meeting with Anagarikas here, and one of the Anagarikas asked me the question, is this place, this Amaravati, is the right place to practice Ajahn Chah's teaching? I don't know how exactly he said, but this is the way I remember. And is this the right place we can practice? You can say this. And then often when we have this question, you can say doubt, and then people would say, teacher would say, or wherever you go, you will find a problem. Some place, teacher is good, but place is too busy. Some place is very nice, but not much requisite and very difficult to live. Or wherever you go, some problem you find. So that kind of, you see, we project the mind for the future and then escaping from the situation now. So the teacher will encourage us to see what's happening now, where this doubt comes. But when I heard this question, I also thought, actually, this is very important question, sincere question, because we come here And then this is, we try actually to practice, and we want to try best, because this is actually we put everything of life and then come to ordain. So of course we ask, is this the right place? I'm interested in Ajahn Chah's tradition. Is this the right place? Can I practice? And actually the Anagarika who asked this question, he has been to Thailand. So natural question is this place is secondary? Thailand is a better place? I mean, it becomes a challenging question. And what I said and what I can say now is this place, yes, no problem. It's not like a good enough, that kind of way, more than that. And as I said, all the setting is so well organized and well supported. We need discipline compared to Thailand. Nothing is missing, very well looked after, and so on. And teaching is well given to us. So really nothing is missing. Of course, you can compare various things. Okay, if you go to Thailand, there's a Bindabat and a more typical traditional lifestyle of monks and so on, which you can't experience here. So in that sense, there are differences. And then some good aspect, difficult aspect, in both ends, yes. But it's not a matter of comparison. This is better than that, the other, or vice versa, the other way. First I can say here is this is a right place. Nothing is missing, according to my observation experience. And also you can ask another question. Suppose if we are in Thailand, and then is anything guaranteed? No, not at all. Yes, there are different way of very, very supportive environment from the country itself, people, culture, history. Many things are so tuned into supporting the practice, yes. And yet, are we guaranteed to practice all right there? I do not know. And I've seen, actually, many people. Yes, there are wonderful Viveka place, solitary place, so many opportunities. But then so for instance, the monks who are there are getting what we are looking for. I do not know, honestly. And so what matters here is whether we practice with samadhi, right understanding, right attitude, with wonderful environment and so on. But we can miss the most important thing. Same thing, this winter retreat, yes, very special, precious opportunity, plenty of time, many things to appreciate. And yet, this right, whether we are in the right place or not. And okay, about Ajahn Chah's teaching. Ajahn Chah's teaching, often people talk about, actually, what? Yes, when we read Ajahn Chah's teaching or heard Ajahn Chah's teaching, so helpful. And then the heart feels like free or freer. But then you want to summarize it. What is his teaching? If you go to certain places, they teach Anapanasati in 16 stages, or if you go to Maharshi place, this, or Paroxysmal place, this, there are very clear method, but Rinpoche has not. So people say, ask what actually he teaches. And the people answers in a very different ways. And this is my version. Whatever he teaches, he says from the place of suffering and non-suffering. Immediacy of suffering and non-suffering. You can say Four Noble Truths, yes. So this is, I see the same thing in Rinpo Sumedho's teaching. I mean, people ask what Rinpo Sumedho teaches, sound of silence, as a method. Maybe yes, but what he really pointing at and what really he always stand is to me immediacy of suffering and non-suffering. And how I hear what Ajahn is teaching us, guiding us, encouraging us, often he used the word becoming. So when we fall into this world of samsara, everything starts, this becoming. So he is pointing at various aspects of our practice, mind, function, and so on, very skillful way, but he never loses. I can hear where he speaks from. So in that sense, teaching-wise, we are inheriting what Rinpoche was doing, I believe. And so when we practice now, these 3 months, Rambhagna, it's not easy. My pen like up, I don't mind. So we have a willingness. It is each of us' responsibility is to encourage ourselves, remind ourselves how we started. I don't mind. Hardship, okay. I try. But how to try? Where? This is very significant. Where? Samadhi. One time, Ajahn Munindo gave us talk here, and he said, as a Rinpoche's word, Samadhi, no ditti. And quite interesting. Also, when we chanting the Buddha's words of loving kindness, and towards the end, no fixed views. And the later translation is no false view, but this not holding on to any fixed views. And then Ajahn Chah's word, Samadhi, no ditti. Again, this is pointing out the place of nobody, no thing out of samsara. It is, in my understanding, it is not that we work hard and hard in the samsara and then eventually somehow we have an exit from the samsara. But I see it is just a matter of where to stand, whether unburdened non-becoming place, or we simply fall into assuming place of samsara. And this is actually constant, can cause constant conflict, even if we understand importance of non-becoming place of samadhi, but we can be drawn back to the habit place, familiar, comfortable place of world, place of samsara. And then the practice is to remind ourselves again and again, as Rinpoche Smedo, he sometimes said to us, he would write a word again and again, silence, silence, silence. I haven't seen him doing this. I heard this, silence, 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 silence. So what is this silence? So silence from all the activity of samsara, all the activity of becoming, all the habit of this commentary, this judgment, I am this, I cannot do this, this is terrible, I have to, this should be, and so many, many things which can happen to us. And silence. You are none of them. Completely free. We do not have to be intimidated by any thoughts, any emotions, any conditions. And we do not have to suppress or welcome or any of them or control. We do not have to be afraid of all the emotions or so-called problems. Once we understand the place of non-suffering or silence, everything can happen, anything can arise, and yet you are none of them. Silence. Close. Yeah, thank you very much.